We need a recipe book for relationships. We need to know the necessary ingredients that will strengthen our marriages, strengthen our ability to raise our children, how we deal with our siblings, how we deal with conflict, which is a mystery unto itself, how we deal with disappointment when people disappoint us, how we deal with rejection, and the list goes on. We need the helpful ingredients that not just speak to the mind, but speak to the heart, where the business of life really takes place. We need a book that provides instructions on how to move forward to have strong relationships. Because in case we haven't noticed yet, spiritual maturity is not designed by who carries the biggest Bible, who can quote the most verses, or who has perfect attendance at church. God puts a heavy priority on how we treat people. So we need the right recipe book. My friends, the Bible is that recipe book for us. The Bible provides the necessary ingredients and instructions that make for strong relationships. And we're going to say that every week over the next few weeks together. And so this is on the screen. I want you to say this together. Repetition is good for the heart, especially something that's good. So let's say this together. The Bible provides me with the ingredients and instructions that make strong relationships. Now, as you go through a cookbook, they give you plenty of instructions. Some might seem somewhat crazy, but there's one instruction that's easy, even for me, and that's measure, okay? And I have a couple of measuring tools that I stole from Jen's kitchen. I'm not sure if they'll make it back today, but we'll try. But here's a little measuring. This is for a teaspoon, okay? And then you have something over here. This is for a half a cup. And then you have actually a third of a cup with this one. And of course, you have a whole measuring cup. And when you think about cooking, sometimes you got to measure water. Sometimes you have to measure oil. Sometimes you're measuring the amount of salt that you're going to put in something. And the list goes on. Tomato paste, whatever you're cooking. Measuring is an important part of the cooking process. It's an important part of any recipe. In fact, you will see the word measure in just about every recipe. Now, I know some people, as they get older, they try to eyeball it and they know exactly what they're going to do, but even that, they're measuring according to what they think is the right thing to put in there. Measuring is very important. And I like to think the same is true for relationships. We need to measure our patience. We need to measure our peace. We need to measure our forgiveness that we're going to extend to people. We need to measure our words and how we talk to people. But the greatest ingredient of all that we have to measure, that we need to make sure that we're measuring the right way, is love. And I like to think of this as the hinge pin of relationships. If we neglect measuring the amount of love that God calls us to have in our relationships, we will continue to experience disappointment. We will continue to get frustrated. And we will continue to get stressed out. And there's a lot of things that go with that. You put on weight when you're stressed out. Or you stop eating. Nevertheless, either way, it's not healthy for you. Guys, you pull your hair out or you lose your hair. Costs you a lot of money. A lot of sleep. It's so important that we measure out the love that God has called us to do in our relationships. I would say that this is essential. If you want to have strong relationships, I didn't say perfect relationships, because the people who you partner with in your life, that you have a relationship with, they're not perfect and you're not perfect. However, it is possible to love people through conflict. It is possible to love people even after they hurt you. It is possible even to forgive after somebody has broken trust. It is possible. It's possible by measuring our love according to Jesus Christ. You know, when we try to love people in our own strength, it never works. You ever notice that? We have an incredible memory when it comes to the hurts that people have caused us. We have an incredible memory when it comes to those things that people have said that have cut right to our heart. And if you haven't noticed yet, people have the same memory for the things you've said. Now, has anybody ever said anything they regretted to somebody? Okay. We all have. We've done things. So we need to know what exactly is the measurement that God calls for in His Word. Because I know you're like me. You know, you don't want to be a phony in your walk with God. You don't want people to go, look, you act one way on Sunday, you act a totally different way during the week. You want to be consistent. This is the way to be real. This is the way to be genuine. You know what? This isn't the way to be perfect, because nobody's perfect. But this is the way to be genuine in your walk with Christ. This is far beyond just being some religious holy roller. This is being a real-life Christian, someone who's really following Christ, someone who's measuring their love for other people according to the ways of God. Now, I'm thankful that the Bible doesn't leave us hanging, and I want to pick up from where we left off last week. If you have a Bible, you can turn to the 22nd chapter of the Gospel of Matthew. It's here where Matthew, who was called by Jesus to follow him, if you remember back in, we saw that back in Matthew chapter 9, Matthew, a tax collector, now follower of Jesus Christ, but God's using him to write the scriptures we see now from our vantage point 2,000 years later. And he records a certain account, a certain situation that was presented to Jesus. The Pharisees and the Sadducees, the religious leaders and the controllers of the temple, approached Jesus and were asking him questions about heaven, about the resurrection, about the bonds of marriage in heaven. And after Jesus gave them what was a perfect answer, they were silenced. Actually, the word means muzzled. They were muzzled because he answered the question so perfectly. And then they got a lawyer. Not a lawyer in the way we think of it, but a lawyer in Jesus' day was somebody who was an expert in the Old Testament. In fact, he was also known to be a scribe, somebody who copied and translated the Old Testament. He was brought in, this lawyer, this scribe, to settle debates. When debates arose among people about the Bible, when they had inner disputes personally, whatever it might have been. And so this scribe and this lawyer was brought to Jesus, and he came up to Jesus, and I believe 50% of his heart was deceitful. He wanted to try to catch Jesus, try to show Jesus he was smarter than him, which he wasn't. But the other 50% he was seeking. He wanted truth for this area, because this was his question. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment? And then Jesus responded in verse 37. He says this, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your soul." He said, this is the first and greatest commandment. We covered that last week. The bedrock of every relationship in your life, believe it or not, is not loving yourself more. We love ourselves plenty. Is not trying to buy things to make ourselves feel better about ourselves. We have plenty compared to most of the world. Actually, the secret and the bedrock of relationships is loving God more, because that's how we decentralize ourselves and we become less selfish. Jesus said, that's the first and greatest commandment. This is the basis of your life. And then he threw in a second one. Now, this is a freebie. He didn't ask for a second one. He threw this in. You ever get something at the store and you didn't ask for it, they threw it in? That makes me feel great when that happens. Man, I feel great when I get something that I didn't ask for. And I bet you this scribe felt that way. He's about, and I'm glad Jesus gave him this, because this is the basis of how we're to treat one another. Jesus said this is the first and greatest commandment, and notice the second is like, in other words, it's on par with it. The first is the first, that's the bedrock, but this next commandment is on par with the first one I just told you. It's as equally as important. You don't just, okay, I'll get this one down, I'll forget the other one. And that's sometimes what Christians in church are guilty of. Christians are known to be cheap, greedy, and rude. And while sometimes people say that they have an axe to grind with organized religion, sometimes that description fits the church like a glove. We must be so far above that. We must be people who are generous. We must be people who are sensitive. My friends, we must be people who set the example of Christ and how we treat other people. And that is why Jesus said this is important. Put your focus on this. Don't waste your time trying to jump through the hoops of religion. This is where your focus needs to be. Love God, and notice the second one. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. He says, on these, notice, two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. He's speaking about, of course, the Ten Commandments. And he's speaking about all of what the prophets came to say would be true of God and his plan to come. Now, what does it mean to love your neighbor as yourself? Oh, yeah, I think lovely things about people. Let me make this a little more clear. When you're hungry, you go get something to eat. When you're thirsty, you get something to drink. If your leg hurts,
you might get off your leg. If you're cold, you put on a sweater. If you're hot, you open the window. If you're sick, you take medicine. If you're sick, you go to the doctor. You don't just think about going to the doctor, you go do it. I don't know about you, but the last time I was hungry, I didn't think about a steak. Oh, a steak would be nice right now. I went out and ate. When was the last time you were parched from a summer's day? And there was the faucet right in front of you, or the Gatorade right in the refrigerator. Oh, let me just think about the Gatorade, and that will replenish, and that will quench my thirst. No, you had a need, and you met it. When Jesus was saying, love your neighbor as yourself, what he was saying was, meet needs in the lives of other people the same way you meet your own needs. That's what it means to love yourself. And as I told you last week, we love ourselves a lot. Nobody wakes up in the morning and goes, oh, look, my hairline's receding. I'm so glad I'm about to lose my hair. Nobody says that. Nobody wakes up and says, oh, look, those love handles are getting bigger each day. Nobody says that. Oh, I'm so glad. Oh, there's my ugly big toe again. Oh, there it goes. Can't wait to wear sandals again when the spring comes so people could see how ugly my feet are. Nobody says that because we love ourselves. We care about our appearance. When we're hungry, we feed ourselves. When we're thirsty, we get something to drink. And Jesus says in the same way that you look and take care of yourself, the same way you polish your cute little face, the same way you meet the needs in your life, that's how I want you to love other people. And so as we talk about this recipe for our relationship with others, I want you to write this first principle down. The ingredient is clear. It's meeting needs. And so here's the instruction. If we're going to love others the way that Jesus said we are to, write this down. We need 1 pound of meeting needs. 1 pound of meeting needs. Now, when you measure pounds, you don't use a measuring cup, as I said earlier. You know, a measuring cup measures more things like liquid and things you can actually fit in here, but you can't put a pound in here, okay? You need a scale when you measure a pound. And I like to think of how we relate to others. We need a scale. We need to actually weigh out. You know, how am I doing with meeting needs around me? How am I going about my day with meeting the needs of people around me? Now think about that for a second. Do you view that? Is that your perspective with the people in your life? Do you see them as people that I care about, that I love, but take it a step further? Jesus isn't talking about a feeling, which feelings are a part of it. He's talking about an action. Am I taking action? Am I actively looking to meet the needs of the people in my life? See, Christians talk a great game. Oh, I love you. I'll pray for you. I'll do this. You know what? It's time to put some feet to those prayers. It's time to serve one another. And so this is a basis not only for your personal life, it's even a basis for ministry and church. We are called by Jesus to love the people in our life, and that is an action word. You want to have a strong marriage? Serve one another. Meet the needs of one another. That's very mature in the faith. You may only be coming to church a few months. You start applying love this way today, watch your spiritual growth. Watch your maturity begin to grow. You may only be 16 years old, or you're not even 20 years old yet. You're going, oh, all that Christian stuff. You know, my parents forced me to come. As soon as I hit a certain age, I'm out of here. And I'll get reacquainted with God when I'm on my deathbed, okay? First of all, that's a bad strategy. You need God in your life right now. In case you haven't noticed yet, a majority of your friends are followers. And they're following whatever's in style. Do this drug, okay, we'll do this drug. Drink this, we'll drink that. Party up here, we'll do that. Got to feel good, got to get it done now. But what people don't realize is the decisions you make today as a teenager affect who you are tomorrow. You want to be successful in life. You don't want to be dependent upon other people. You don't want to be working a dead-end job. Then don't make dead-end decisions right now. Make decisions that far outlast your teenage years. Make decisions that are eternal. Make decisions based on the one who truly loves you unconditionally, and that's God.
You don't need to wake up at the end of your life going, I should have, I could have, and I didn't. I know far too many people, being a pastor who I counsel, who are going through rough times in their life, and they regret the decisions they made earlier. But now that they've been reintroduced to the peace of God, to the love of God, it's changing their life. And guess what happens? It starts to change their relationships and how they treat one another. So think about the relationships you have. Do you have a wife, guys? How can you meet her needs? Now, whenever they talk about that on television, when they talk about meeting needs, the only thing they talk about is sex. As if people have all day to have sex all day. First of all, nobody has sex all day. And second of all, you got to go to work. Second of all, you got to eat. Second of all, you got to shower. But that's all the world knows about meeting needs. Sex, that's what we call it. In fact, when people do, when they have counseling, that's something that will come up. Can they meet my needs? Well, we don't realize that a small percentage of your time in a marriage is actually spent in the area of intimate relations. The business of a marriage is serving one another. Because if you don't serve one another, watch out, you'll start hitting one another and killing one another eventually. Serving one another and meeting needs brings sanity to your relationships. Even with your children. Your children are going to do things that are going to just stress you out. They're going to do things that just bug you out. You go, what are you doing? If you don't have the mindset that God has called me to serve this child, you're going to give up on that child. If you don't have the mindset that God has a plan, He's given you the strength within you, that He's given you the ingredient of love, and that ingredient is best used by taking action. If you have children, how can you serve them? Children, if you're here with your parents, or maybe you came alone, how can you serve your parents? What are the things that you can do? What are the chores that you can do? I'm not talking about doing chores to get money. I'm talking about just doing it because you love the person. And so let me give you a little homework. From this day forward, treat each week as an opportunity to do a deed of love for the people that you have in your life. Write their names down. Even though I already know, no, you be diligent about it. You make a list and say, what could I do to serve this person? What could I do to serve that person? That's what Jesus was talking about. Now, this isn't something that's just isolated to this passage. You'll notice in your outline that Jesus reiterated this principle several other times. He reiterated in the Gospel of Mark, which is an exact occurrence of what we're reading here in Matthew. But then if you look in Luke chapter 10, Jesus is actually in a conversation with another scribe, perhaps the same one. And this scribe, actually, in Luke chapter 10, verse 25, Jesus is talking to him about things about eternal life and walk with God. And Jesus poses a question to him, and he responds to him, and he gives him what Jesus just gave us. Love God with all your heart and love others as yourself. And Jesus says you've answered correctly, but then he throws another question at him. Well, who's your neighbor? Why did Jesus ask that question? Because the man wasn't loving his neighbor. He was prideful. He wasn't meeting needs. And then what comes contextually right after? Now, context is important in the Bible. How many of you are fed up with some of those phony people on television that take a verse? Okay, me too. I'll tell you an experience I had last week. We went to go visit my in-laws, and there's a couple bedrooms there, and Jen informed me that I was going to be sleeping on the couch. We didn't have a fight or anything, but she said, I'm going to be sleeping on the couch, and I didn't know about that end of the deal before we went to my in-laws. So I said, okay, I'll sleep on the couch. And I'm watching the television, and this guy comes on television. And I'm going to tell you his name, because if you watch him, I want you to stop watching him, because he's a false teacher. He's a heretic. His name is Peter Popoff. And he was telling people, this heretic, Peter Popoff, we get that on tape? This heretic, Peter Popoff. Okay, just want to make sure. You may say, I can't believe, I'm not coming back to this church. This pastor's calling people out. Well, what do you think the Apostle John did in his day? You know what? Teach whatever you want. Lead everybody astray, as long as everybody's happy. Everybody happy? Long as that, whatever tickles your ears, whatever floats your boat, whatever finds your lost remote, whatever makes you feel good. No, that's not it. If somebody's going to be on TV telling people that they can send in money and get miracle water, and they can drink it to take away their cancer, to take away their pain, to give them money and to fix their relationships, you can bet your bottom dollar I'm going to get up and say that that is a lie from the pits of hell. Because I serve a God and you serve a God who sits on his throne, who's sovereign and isn't bottling up water to sell and peddle to people's needs. Because he speaks to the heart of our need. He knows the depths of your need. And so don't get discouraged by what you see around you. Know that God has prescribed in his word the ingredients for you to walk with him in a loving way. You don't need somebody's phony baloney miracle water. He's given you ingredients so that you can enjoy the relationships in your life. And I pray for Peter Popoff, because he must not be saved if he's peddling that stuff around. I pray he gets saved. But God has called us to love other people, even Peter. He's called us to love people. And he knows that it's hard work. And so, as we look at the context, people on TV just take one verse, make anything out of it. The context of what Jesus was saying in the Gospel of Luke about love was, what did he talk about right after he said, who's your neighbor? What was the famous parable he gave? The parable of the Good Samaritan. Right after Jesus said, hey, okay, you think you know it all? You think you know who your neighbor is? He said, let me tell you who your neighbor is. And he gave the parable of the Good Samaritan. Now, if you're not familiar with the parable of the Good Samaritan, allow me to summarize it. Samaritans and Jews did not get along. And there was a road that was traveled often to Jericho, and it was a 17-mile journey, and the road was somewhat on an incline, depending on which way you go, or a decline, some 3,000 feet. And it was a treacherous road. People would get robbed all the time. And one time, a certain man was traveling, and he was mugged, stripped, and left for dead. A priest walked by the other side of the street and left him. An assistant priest walked by, saw him, and kept going. But a Samaritan man who did not get along with Jews. They were like, you know, sandpaper with each other, okay? Like oil and water. They did not mix well. This Samaritan man stopped and took care of the man. And it says that he dressed his wounds. And he dressed it with oil. It sounds like a salad dressing, actually, that he had in his backpack. I don't know if he just came from Wendy's or something like that and got one of their salads from the drive-thru. But he used whatever he had on him. Oil and wine. And oil and wine were used in those days as ointments to treat people. And you know, you have people today who misuse that and say that, you know, we anoint people with oil thinking we have holy oil. It's not the case. Oil was used as an antiseptic, and so was wine in those days. So you don't need to drink to get drunk to feel better. You don't need oil to put on you. It's not special or holy. We don't need to sell it in the bookstore or anything like that. It simply was a medicine. And so he bandages him up. He then puts him on his animal, his donkey. They didn't have a car then. He couldn't throw him in the back seat and have an SUV. Couldn't call for the medvac to come or to be airlifted. Put him on his own donkey. Took him to a hotel somewhere. He took out his American Express business class card and said, whatever this man needs, it's on me. Room service, whatever he needs. Give him the robe. Give him the slippers. Let him have access to the pool. Whatever he needs, it's on me. Now, don't go home and look that up and say, is there a pool in the Good Samaritan story? I just want to tell you, there's not. Just adding a little there. But the Good Samaritan took care of this man. And Jesus said, that is who your neighbor is. The person who has needs. See, that's what it's about. Loving others is meeting needs. Now, church is a great context for that. Because you might say, well, okay, I know I got to meet the needs of the people in my life, but I know that there are needs all around me. How can I get involved more? That's why God gave you church. God gave you church so you have a place to come and sing his praises and give him honor for what he's done in your life. And he's also given you church for a place that you can come to not sit on your blessed assurance, but for you to come to get in the game and to serve. Because God has called you to meet the needs of other people. And I don't care if I sound like a broken record, but who better to minister to a single mom than a single mom? Who better to minister to somebody who is addicted to pain medication than somebody who is addicted to pain medication?
Who better to minister to someone who went through a bout with cancer than someone who went through a bout? You know, and on we go. Who better to minister to somebody who was molested than somebody who was molested? And on we go. If you haven't clued in yet, God wants to use you. You're not as broken as the devil would want you to believe. God wants to use your past to pave your future with serving Him. He wants to use you. So I like to think of it in two ways. We have a primary opportunity to serve and a secondary opportunity. Your primary is wherever you're gifted and whatever your experiences are. And we all have experiences. And we're all gifted at something. Even me. Even I have something I'm gifted in. I'm about as sharp as a marble sometimes.